Welcome to the Coffee Cast with Cation and Ruben, powered by Behind the Racket, the podcast dedicated to looking at the top issues facing tennis and getting to know the players facing them.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. The Coffee Cast can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
Special thanks to our sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at newbalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at hashtag NBGivesBack.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com. And now.
This is the new segment that we have been working on and naming and framing and trying to put together into words what is going to be called Noah's 15-All, covering all things Noah Rubin in 15 minutes as we take you behind the racket with Noah through the 2020 season. As we're recording this, it is approximately 35 minutes until kickoff of the Super Bowl.
What?
54? 84?
Did we just start? Is this the first?
1966 was the first.
Really?
Yeah.
So good sports knowledge
34,
there.
20, 54.
Okay.
54.
Okay. So it's not an important year by any means.
No. But so again, if this is new to you, what we're doing is kind of taking you behind the racket with Noah through the year so he can kind of talk to you about how his season's going, his thought processes, and anything that's inside that mind.
Again, Hi. It's going to be exhausting. You're going to take a trip with me. But yeah, there's definitely a few thoughts. I mean, starting out, I'm feeling pretty good. It's been about 2 weeks now without pain in my elbow, so it's promising. I'm excited. I'm in a good state of mind. So that's just the tip of the iceberg right now. So I'm in a good place. I'm just looking to play tennis. I think that's what it is. And, you know, it's not fully BS. I think in the beginning, there's a lot of times where you lie to yourself if you're really just there to play tennis and have fun. And I think I've, you know, through a lot of thought and talking it out, I think I am. But I want to start this one off with just a little PSA of
Public
sorts.
Service announcement.
Yes. And this one goes out to the agents out there.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, I understand that you guys have a duty, a part, and a role to make sure that the life of your tennis players, plural or not, is protected and you're doing the best by your player. But I think we have gotten to a point where you aren't seeing the broader picture and you're not seeing the future that could be had within your sport, within your player's future, within whatever it is. And it's been tough. I mean, through Behind the Racket, through podcasts.
I feel like you're subtweeting somebody here, and I think it's not.
This goes out to too many people that it is actually not personal at this point.
So for those of us who are not necessarily in the know,
yes.
What
am I saying?
Yes.
What I'm saying is it's been very difficult. I've had a few times where, and it's almost a game at this point. We'll go up to the agent because I try to be respectful just as you try to be. You've done it with your podcast before me where maybe you try to go up to a coach first or somebody else because you don't want to bother the player as much. And even
so you're
though,
talking about approaching them for Behind the Racket?
Right now, Got in it. This case, yes. So I'm talking about approaching for Behind the Racket. You go up to them. You say, hey, we have this opportunity. No, it is not a payment opportunity, but not only does this help me behind the racket, this will help tennis. This will give publicity to your player. Maybe it's not at the place you would like it to be at. I'm not a New York Times. I'm not at this, but I'm doing something different. And I will get an immediate no. Immediate no. Like, we're perfectly fine with you saying, let's plan it out. Let's see in the next 6 months if we have time. But I'm getting immediate no's from these agents because they don't see the opportunity. And then I'll go up to the player 2 days later. Yes, behind the agent's back and say, hey, do you have time to possibly 10, 15 minutes behind the racket interview? Not too much time. And they'll be like, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, what are you preventing the player, or what lack of vision do we have right now? And I'm almost opening up the door to questions and answers and statements from agents saying the reason why they're saying no so quickly, because obviously I'm not an agent. I don't have knowledge in this field, but I have to guess that you can decipher whether an opportunity can help the player, can help tennis.
It's about controlling the narrative for their client.
They know they have final say in what goes out.
It's about controlling the narrative. And if a behind the racket shows weakness of some sort, be it a loss of a parent or mental health issues, that suddenly potentially takes away from money because they're weak or whatever. I'm not.
Understand. You're playing devil's advocate
here, but
no, understand. And I guess then this is a broader PSA to people in general, just opening up the conversation and the door for that, if that's your argument. But yeah, it's been a very difficult process. And I thought, and obviously I've had more success than people in media has, you know, have had, because I do have these connections with players and friendships. But still, to know that these agents, whether they want to control the narrative, whether they just don't see the vision, whatever the case may be, aren't seeing the opportunity. It's been upsetting, and it's been really tough. And I just want to, you know, I almost want to know from my own, you know, knowledge, why is this the case?
Something we had a conversation, me, you, and one other player. I don't want to name them because it was, I guess you would say, off the record.
Mm-hmm.
About how he said nothing is negative has happened to him, and he was didn't think it would fit with behind the racket.
Right.
I think you know the conversation that we're talking about.
Yes.
And I think that has been an issue for you in that regard, because there are not as many maybe success stories, or the, I guess if you will, the positive, happy stories. And so from an agent perspective, it's hard to shape that narrative when you think it's just going to be about a negative thing.
No, of course. I just think, you know, if you look through the stories that have been put out, the responses have been overwhelmingly supportive.
Sure,
and positive.
Absolutely.
And I think that is helpful in its own regard. Yes, behind the racket is highlighting a lot of tough situations, but the positivity comes because you see where the players are today. So here,
agreed,
they are dealing with the situations. Yes, can I do a better job of making it positive? Possibly, but I don't know if that's, you see where they are now. You know that. You see that story. You see the matches they win. I want to show you this side that shows who they are and how they got to where they are. But, you know, that's just kind of, you know, one of the things I've been dealing with on and off. And it's been difficult. But, again, I just want to know for my own sake, because it's been exhausting at times.
At Noah Rubin 33 for any agents that are interested in conversing. Okay.
But
here's
the next one. This, yeah, that agent one went a little further because, obviously, Mike has to prove that I don't always think.
It's not about proving anything. It's providing a contrast.
Right. The proving stuff happens off the mic.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, so.
Just see my tweets.
This one, I don't know if I haven't really thought about fully how to articulate it. But it kind of happened. You know, you're going to see this Ty Kwiatkowski titled. First title. Mm. Challenger title, which has been obviously a long time coming.
So happy for him.
Yeah, I you know, I was one of the first people to say this guy is talented. You put a few pieces together. I mean, he has a 150 serve while moving, you know, extremely well, can do a lot of things with that tennis ball. Sometimes the mental can get in the way. Obviously, we've seen before. Again, this is going to be a wishy-washy thing because I haven't thought about it, but it's this culture in tennis of competitiveness, and this could be just me, so I don't want to lump all tennis players in with it, but it's this idea of always grasping for what other people are doing, always comparing yourself to others, and it really, it's a problem, and it adds anxiety and adds negativity to your own life, and it's been an issue that I've dealt with and have been trying to overcome. So this is, I guess, a big thing for me to be talking about out loud. But, you know, in no way, shape, or form do I root for people to lose.
Mm-hmm.
But is that split second when a tie wins a match? And believe me, I probably wasn't the first one to call him, but I tried to be one of the first people to call him after his match to congratulate him and to tell him to make sure that he enjoys this moment because it's been a long time coming. But it's that split second where I'm like, fuck, he won the tournament. And I'm like...
And I didn't.
And you didn't because you're a little further away from winning a challenger than what I give you credit for. But here I am not having the success I want in the past couple months or whatever, and you look outside to somebody you've been traveling with, and it has nothing to do with past results. It is just what happened this week, and here you are. You know, I took last week off. I was training, and he titled. And it was just like, shit, like, I'm not doing enough. And here he is titling. Like, I'm in no way upset that he personally won the title, but it in my own mind reflects poorly on me as a person and tennis player, which not one other person in this world is thinking Ty won that tournament. Wow, Noah really sucks at tennis, except for Noah. So that I think has led me to try to work on, which I think is super important and very difficult in an individual sport, which is comparing yourself to others and grasping at straws from other people. I think
you do realize that happens to everyone. Literally everyone in any industry. That what you're talking about is a universal feeling, as evidenced by my Twitter rant last night. Frankly, I mean...
I guess what the difference is, and I totally agree, this happens in every realm of every facet of the world. Tennis is strictly individual. You really don't have a team, and it's a numbers game. You're literally looking at a number. They're telling you are not as good as this person. And if you're not winning as many matches, you are not as good as this player. So there's always this competitive feel, which again, you are getting in other fields, but has been a very difficult thing for me, even as what I consider, I'm a pretty confident person. I'm sure a lot of players would say I'm too confident, too arrogant. But I think it's in the deep dark holes of the 2:30 a.m. is when you're up at night thinking and you're like, you know, when everything subsides, and it's not long thoughts, but it's just like, fuck, that guy just won that match. And I'm like, what am I doing? And I think that's one of the cultural issues that tennis players are dealing with right now.
My point in saying that it happens in every industry is not to diminish.
No, of course.
In any way, shape, or form.
It's bigger than tennis. I understand
that. It is.
That.
It's, that's a pretty human feeling.
Yeah.
And again, I think we just recorded an episode with Mitchell Krueger, which will drop tomorrow. But just that issue of humanity within the sport, within this particular culture is very challenging. And I think that's the thing. What you're experiencing, I've experienced. The person who was working the front desk here at the TBRM Racquet Club probably says, why did that guy get the raise and I didn't?
No,
everybody,
100%.
Everybody has that, and you're just dealing with it in a very unique workplace.
And not to put tennis on a pedestal, I don't like doing that, but it's the only thing I can, relate it to. You look, we're talking about the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's coming. One team's going to win, one team's going to lose.
Yep.
The team that loses, how many players are on a football team?
53.
Wow. Right off the bat. So you have
plus a five-man.
You have 52 other players. You know, you have the saying, misery loves company.
Yeah.
So you're losing together, you're winning together, you have people that are by your side that you're having these feelings with, and you're going to, a little sneak peek into Mitchell. I spoke about one of the most incredible moments of my tennis career I shared with somebody. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the lack of community at times within tennis. You talk about the lack of team competitions. How is it that, through what I think I had some success throughout my years, and especially as juniors, one of my fondest moments in tennis was with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And, what does that mean? And, I'm opening up this conversation to anybody that wants to be part of it. I mean, what can we do to change that culture? I've already started to just try to interact with people. I mean, I came on the tour and, of course, I was friendly to everybody. I was friendly, but I was like, no, I'm not going to hang out with you. I'm not going to do this or that. I'm going to go to the art gallery and nobody wants to come with me and blah, blah, blah. But, at this point, I am finding how important it is to try to build these friendships and relationships and bonds, because what do you have when you lose a match?
Yeah.
And that's been such a difficult ride and learning lesson, because you know, I've moved back to New York. I'm training with an old coach. My father's helped me out. I'm seeing my girlfriend and family. I have this community back together where I'm feeling comfortable. I'm working on the process, my game, my mental's in the right place, but still worrying about, you know, ranking, money, all this other stuff. So what happens throughout the process when you're losing matches? Who's there with you? These are the people around you. Obviously, you and I have become very close, which is super sad for both of us. And but at the same time, you know, in 40 years from now,
I'll be
God
dead.
Willing, you know,
I'll be way dead.
A lot of the moments we'll remember is when you and I were here before, you know, the 54th Super Bowl, and we're just outside, beautiful weather, nobody around us. You know, these are the moments, and I think I have to do a better job of just trying to make the culture. I know it's there. It's just honing in on it and saying, hey, guys, like, let's actually be here for one another. Like, you know, put the bullshit aside.
I would say, in a rare moment where I will compliment you, this shows actually a lot of growth from you, from where you were when we did our first couple podcasts together in Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Just the appreciation for what you need in terms of that humanity side. I think that shows that you've gone through a lot here in the last like 9 months.
Yeah, a lot of darkness. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, you can joke about it or not, but you know, you find yourself, and that's why, you know, I'm using Ty because he just won this tournament. I want to, you know, harp on it for him to enjoy, to take everything in, to know he deserves it, but to know very well that he can lose first round next week. So to understand what this means to him, it's more than the point. It's more than the tennis. It's you did something great. You showed yourself that you can do it. But it's taking little aspects. It's remembering little moments. It's taking the interpersonal relations that you got from Newport Beach, whatever it is, because, again, I have won 4 challengers and, you know, lost first round every time after them. And things kind of go back to normal-ish, even if I do well after. So it's... there's a lot more to it. The wins, I mean, people have said it before, but you can't be happy in a sport where you lose more than you win, and you can't be happy when you're just winning. There has to be more to it.
Alex Vukic, this podcast will come out about 5 or 6 hours before you play him.
Mm-hmm.
I called for this match when I was doing qualies at the Australian Open, was praying for it then. It happens a couple weeks later, and I don't get to broadcast it.
And you don't get to broadcast it.
I like both of you very much. Alex is a good kid. So, you know, enjoy it.
I'm not shaking my head for that reason. No, I'm excited. Again, you know, I feel good right now. I feel ready to go. I think we always forget how long of a year it is. Again, I think that's another thing. So it's just... you can literally lose for 6 months straight and win a challenger and be like, oh, that's a pretty good year when your record is like 7-30, but you want a challenger. So again, we're harping on this process thing, and we could see if I actually truly believe in it or not.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoRubin33 and at MikeCTennis. We want to hear your opinions and stories behind the racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us ratings on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket on the Coffee Cast with Cation and Rubin.